Breaking news, Dr. Paul here. I wanted you to know that the chairman of the board of Children's Health Defense, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. himself, lead counsel for this organization, is calling for a worldwide walkout. Massive numbers of people, perhaps you, perhaps your loved ones, have lost their jobs because of vaccine mandates. It is time that we stand together and say no. No to vaccine mandates. No to mask mandates. No to forced medical care that is harmful, hurtful, does not make scientific sense. Even one day, if enough of us walk out of our jobs for one day, the message will be heard loud and clear. And I would encourage us to stay on this one until they get the message. That governments around the world, propped up and backed up by pharmaceutical companies who are making billions of dollars of profits, and the public health officials who are in their pockets, the mandates that are forcing vaccination on the public, forcing vaccination on our children, and forcing us to social distance and wear masks, removing our freedoms, must stop. It's been done before. We can do it again. We are uniting for freedom. And let's get our freedoms back. Dr. Paul, welcome to episode 23 of Against the Wind, Doctors and Science Under Fire. Today's episode features a very great interview with Dr. Mark McDonald. He is a psychiatrist, both child and adult. He was very involved in the Rome Declaration. This is over 1,000 doctors around the world have signed on to this declaration about how we handle the COVID outbreak and what's going on. But we do a deep dive into masks and COVID vaccines in children and the impact of the vaccine program and quarantine and what this is doing to our children. You're not going to want to miss it. I then have a very interesting interview with Kids First Forever co-founder Dee Dee Hoover interviewing a couple college students about what it's like to be in college if you're not towing the party line of getting vaccinated and wearing masks in all situations. You then will hear from Bernadette Pager in the news covering the latest update, the FDA approval of the vaccine for 5 to 11-year-olds. Enjoy the show. I'm Dr. Paul. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. This week, I was in Nashville, Tennessee at the Truth About Cancer 2021. I was presenting, there were 2,000 live participants. It was a 3-day packed event. And the interesting thing that just got my attention was here we were, 2,000 people, sometimes elbow to elbow, screaming, happy, hugging. There were no masks. There was no fear. There was a sense of community and a sense of purpose and a ease that I had not been experiencing in my native state of Oregon, where we have mask mandates in all medical facilities. We have mask mandates when you're outdoors if you can't be 6 feet apart. And the contrast was so stark, it had me thinking. What's so different from one state to another, or one country to another? I'm reading the data out of Israel, for example, where the population is one of the most vaccinated in the world, and their rate of hospitalization is quite high, and most are completely vaccinated. Neighboring Egypt, which has a vaccination rate, I understand, of about 10%, has beaches full of people going about their lives and no devastating effect from this lack of being vaccinated, if you will. So something is going on that's more than just COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2. Or normal epidemiology or the medical progression of a viral infection, if you will. There's something else going on. What's really troubling me today that just causes me to want to share with you from the heart is this new FDA recommendation
it's just days away from being rubber stamped as approved to vaccinate our 5 to 11 year olds with the COVID-19 vaccine. And here's why this is troubling. As a pediatrician, my role is to protect. As a parent, your role is to protect those in your care, your children, my patients. If there's a process coming down the road that is clearly dangerous, what do? We protect. The last thing we would want to do is harm those who we're charged with protecting. And yet I see it coming so quickly that it's almost reckless. We already know that children in this age group, actually children 0 to 18, are virtually unaffected by SARS-CoV-2. When they get COVID-19, if they even get that infection, it's a minimal cold at most. The death rates are so low, it's about 1 in 1 million. But we also know that the harm from the vaccine, if you will, side effects or actual effects of injecting a product, it's hard to call it a vaccine because technically a vaccine reduces infection and reduces transmission, which this injection is not doing. And this injection is a brand new technology, whether it's mRNA or DNA technology, that is being inserted into your genetic code so that your cells manufacture spike protein. Spike protein is the toxin. Spike protein is the thing that's causing all the damage. We're talking about a protein that can be incorporated into any part of your body, and then your immune system attacks. Sadly, there's no doubt it will also attack normal body functions, normal body parts. That's called autoimmunity. We know in children the rate of myocarditis in boys is about 1 in 300. There will be a death rate that exceeds the death rate from the disease. So when the vaccine or the intervention, the injection, if you will, causes more harm than good, why would the FDA recommend that we go forward? They've clearly stated that we don't have any long-term follow-up, so we will have to see what happens. If you are agreeing to have your child injected with the COVID-19 vaccine, you're basically agreeing to enroll them in a grand experiment. What troubles me the most is this mRNA technology has never successfully been used in animals, certainly not in humans. We tried it for RSV a couple decades ago. We tried it in the early 2000s for MERS and SARS, the other two coronavirus infections that were similar to the SARS-CoV-2. And it didn't work in the phase 3 animal trials. Animals were dying when re-exposed to the virus. What? We're going to inject our children as if they're a phase 3 animal trial and then just see what happens when they get reinfected? I'm sorry. I'm having trouble with this, and I hope you are having trouble with it also. Parents, step up to the plate. Do what you know in your heart and in your gut is the right thing to do, and at least wait. We should wait 2-3 years and see what kind of outcomes we get before we jump on board to experimentally inject the children of our nation, the children of this world. Now, I'm not giving medical advice. I am a licensed doctor in the state of Oregon, but I am not trying to tell you what to do. I'm merely providing information. We have covered this in great detail in episodes in the past and will continue to bring you the best information we can from experts from around the world. Enjoy the show. I'm Dr. Paul.
Welcome, Dr. Mark McDonald. Boy, is it a pleasure to have you on the show, Against the Wind.
Thank you.
You were born and raised in Los Angeles, graduated from UC Berkeley before attending medical school at the Medical School of Wisconsin. What's unique, I love, is that you trained in both adult and child and adolescent psychiatry at UCLA, and you now work primarily with children in a private practice there in West Los Angeles. I grew up in Africa, and I'm really pleased to see you've traveled the world yourself, worked in Europe, Asia, Central America. I know you've had well-versed opinions on topics like needing to reopen American schools, the pandemic of fear here in the United States, and you've been widely published in local and national news, including the Wall Street Journal and The Federalist. So I am so excited to chat with you today.
Thank you. My book is coming out in a few weeks as well, Pandemic of Fear, which is about specifically the fear-driven ideology and mechanics of this pandemic. And I try to explain it in psychological, psychiatric terms with evidence. And wow. I hope that it will help inform people and maybe give them some hope for how to get out of this fear pandemic, which I think is really much more important in a way than the medical pandemic is, because it's causing so much harm.
Yeah. I start off each of my shows with a from the heart, and the from the heart that I just recorded for this upcoming show was about fear. It is so devastatingly harmful, and I'm so worried about kids. And you work with kids. I'm a pediatrician. I work with kids. Maybe let's just start there. What are you seeing in children? You work in adolescent and childhood psychiatry. What are you seeing these days?
Well, I have had a practice for about 10, 12 years. I've had the typical mixture of anxious and depressed children with some ADHD. Every now and then I get something really severe, trauma, sexual abuse, something that really requires a big intervention with a whole team. But most of the time, it's just your garden variety, anxiety, bedwetting, broke up with girlfriend, sad that can't relocate to the town that he wanted. And it's quite treatable. What I've seen in the last year and a half, though, is this ratcheting up of severity and depth of symptomatology of anxiety and depression in kids across the whole spectrum of ages, races, economic classes. It really hasn't spared anyone, and it's almost untreatable. Medications, therapy, interventions are completely or nearly completely ineffective. And I believe the problem is environmental. I think these kids are swimming and have been swimming for over a year and a half now in a toxic, stressful, irrational, dysfunctional, disconnected environment, which kids must have. They must have the connections. They must have the facial expression, reciprocity, the ability to touch other kids and dirt and animals, to play, to go outside. All of that has been taken from them. And the result, in my opinion, has been a complete collapse of their psyche, an arrest in their development, and the seeds, which are now germinating, and I'd say flowering, really, of a full-blown trauma, which is likely, I think, is going to last for decades, if not generations.
Yeah. No, it. I here in Oregon, I know you're in California, you probably have mask requirements there as well. Mm-hmm. Oregon is requiring masking even outdoors and 6 feet distancing. So I'll drive by kids waiting for a school bus, and they are one at a time spaced 6 feet apart, wearing their masks. There's no light in their eyes. I'm terrified about what we're doing to the children.
As am I. It's really devastating. And so utterly unnecessary. It's really a projection of adult anxiety onto children. And it is, in my view, it really is a form of child abuse. It's a form of abdication of parental adult responsibility. If you're a parent, it's a parent. If you're an educator or a teacher or a doctor, it's your adult responsibility. But either way, we have, as older, wiser caretakers and guardians of our children and the children of our society, a real responsibility to sacrifice, to some degree, our own interests for theirs. And we're not doing that. We're really doing the opposite. We are pleasuring ourselves. We are wallowing on our own anxiety at their expense. And it's truly an abomination.
Yeah. I've had that same feeling, and it's growing stronger and stronger. This is plain old child abuse, and it's got to stop. We have to speak up. You're a child psychiatrist. I mean, this is your field. I'm seeing, as a pediatrician, 5 and 6 year olds coming in with severe anxiety. I even had a school age kid who's suicidal. We didn't see that before.
This is so new. The level and infestation, really, of this psychological illness, which really is grounded in fear ultimately, although I think it's morphed and evolved into something far more sinister, which I think is social control and corruption. But at its core, psychologically, it really is fear. I worked very briefly because most of the work was done by the filmmaker himself, but with a filmmaker here in LA last month called Larry Cook, who had been canceled in Hollywood because he, a year and a half ago, dared to question the reigning orthodoxy of shut up and obey. And he, to his credit, put together a documentary, which is called Unmask Your Child. And I'm featured in it. Dr. Jeff Barkey, who's one of the co-hosts of my podcast, is in it. His wife, Mary Barkey, who's on the Orange County Board of Education, where I got my start a year and a half ago. That's how I got into the Wall Street Journal, was speaking at that meeting. All of these people are in the movie, in the documentary. It's 30 minutes long, and it's aimed at families. It's there to educate parents of children on why you do not need to put a mask on your child's face and why it is so beneficial to allow your child to roam and breathe freely. And I would encourage everybody to go to unmaskyourchild.com and watch this video and share it widely. And I think we can all unify around protecting children. And this is why it's such a good place to start, rather than wading into these kind of difficult gray areas. This is not a gray area. Yeah. Take the mask off your child. There should be no debate on that.
Yeah. So speak to then the parent or school board member who, or a public health official who says, yeah, but there's COVID out there and it's dangerous. Speak to that. They're afraid that if they unmask their child, they're putting their child in harm's way.
Well, it's unfortunate that so little accurate information about this virus has been disseminated by the sources of media that 99% of the population actually use. And they get it, unfortunately, off their phones. They get it in the lobbies at the gyms and the airports. And it really isn't accurate. Most of it is either skewed or it's exaggerated or it's just simply falsified in order to continue this statement of fear and anxiety in our country. But the truth is, and you can get this from the CDC if you even want to go to the website, is that there have been at most 10 or 12 children in the entire country without any serious pre-existing conditions under the age of 18 that have died of this virus. And Dr. Marty McCary, who's a physician at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, published a report over a month ago looking at 40,000 cases of infection in underage Americans, children, and found that of those 40,000, about 300 to 400 had died presumably of coronavirus, although it turned out to be with it. And not a single one of those children, not a single one, had actually been well before that child got infected. Leukemia, serious cancers, morbid obesity with uncontrolled diabetes, very, very serious childhood illnesses had predominated in that group. So if you have a child who is reasonably healthy, your child's risk of dying from any of the coronavirus variants is statistically zero. And if you say, well, gosh, you know, that may be true. I mean, it's not my child I'm worried about. It's my child getting sick and passing it to someone else. All of the evidence shows that that's false. We've known since April of a whole year ago, based on very large reports and studies out of Germany, that children who are in schools do not spread this infection to their teachers. They don't spread it to their parents. In fact, even now in the US, we're seeing data that's showing that most of the time when children do get sick and are symptomatic and it's mild, they're catching it from adults. They're catching it from parents. They're not going out and spreading this disease to other children or other adults. The German report at the Lower Saxony Medical Center said over a year ago in their conclusion after studying this in schools and tracking it, children actually act as barriers to infection. They're like insulation. So the virus goes to the child, it gets sunk in their lungs, it gets killed and drowned like flytrap, and it does not go out. It's like the roach motel. Children are like the roach motel for the virus. They cannot spread the roaches. They get in and they don't go out, right? This is so obvious and so clear, but no, so many people are just not aware of it.
Yeah, no, I have about 10,000 patients at this point. I've not had a single child end up in the ER or the hospital other than one teenager who was vaccinated and had myocarditis. So just today I walked into an office room, saw a kid for a sore throat and fever, low-grade fever and ear infection. And their whole family had had COVID this past month. The parents were mildly ill. The kids, they said, was less than a typical cold. And that's been the story. So we know this, you and I know this. Somehow our public health officials, if they know it, they're not being honest, or do they simply not know? But all we need to do is unmask kids, take away all the barriers, let them become the herd immunity, if you will, natural immunity.
Yeah.
And they'll be the ones protecting those who are at risk.
I would even say to parents that the fact that you are so-called protecting your child by masking and hypersanitizing and distancing is actually not only not helping prevent a spread of infection, you're actually encouraging infection because you're suppressing the natural immune system, which grows and develops in a child through exposure, through challenge, and then presenting your child to far more serious opportunistic infections. The one that's really just skyrocketed across the country in the last 3 months is respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV. Yep. All these hospitalized children with coronavirus, well, they may actually have a coronavirus positive test, but they're in the hospital because of RSV. And yeah. RSV typically does not occur in the summer. It doesn't occur in older kids. And it is in both cases happening at massively higher levels than ever before. And the belief, and I think it's scientifically backed up, of why that's happening is that these kids have had their immune system suppressed for so long that once they get re-exposed to the world, their bodies don't know what to do. It's like being in a wheelchair for 6 months and saying, okay, go run. And then they collapse and break their knee because their muscles are atrophied. This is harming your children.
No, you're absolutely right about RSV. I've already had numerous positives. Here we are in October. We don't usually start seeing RSV till December, and it peaks in January, February.
It's a winter illness.
We're at 4% positives already in the Portland, Oregon area. It is crazy. Wow. Never seen anything like it. Yeah. So let's pivot. All right. We're crystal clear, folks. Get rid of the masks. What about the vaccine now for kids?
There is no reason for any child to be receiving this vaccine. The data are abundantly clear. As I just said earlier, children are not getting seriously ill, not getting hospitalized, and not dying of this disease. Therefore, the first rule of medicine, do no harm, is violated when you provide an intervention which has absolutely no benefit, zero benefit to the child. On the other hand, the harm is, at this point, it's immeasurable. We simply don't know to what degree the harm will accrue over the years to these children. What we do know is, as you mentioned, myocarditis has already infected hundreds of children in this country. Seriously, it's a chronic illness. It's not mild. It causes permanent damage to the heart tissue. And if we were to vaccinate to the percentage that they have in Israel, all of the American children, the expectation is we'd have over 100 to 150,000 cases of myocarditis in this country. Given that no children are dead, they're not on the gurneys in the pathology suites, why on earth would we subject our children to something like this? We don't know what the reproductive effects are. We don't know what the effects are on the brain long-term, early dementia, the immune system. As particularly women get older, they can develop all kinds of autoimmune reactions when they're in their 40s or 50s or older. We have no idea. There is no benefit to vaccinating a child, even if you believe the vaccine is highly effective and really works to shut down this disease, which I believe the data are proving is not the case. But even if you believe that, your child would not benefit from it. It would only be causing your child harm. But we're giving out injections from 2 years ago, a product that was designed for a virus that came out 2 years ago that no longer exists. It's mutated so much that this vaccine is of no value for it. And we're now shooting up children with it. No safety data, no long-term. Children were excluded from all of the clinical trials of this vaccine, as were pregnant women. The most serious, significantly compromised groups in the country that could really be harmed by this, excluded from the trials for safety reasons. And here we are giving it to them. It doesn't make any sense. It's irrational. Your child is more at risk of dying on a car accident on the way to school or dying of seasonal influenza based on CDC data, not mine. There's no reason to be giving a vaccine to children for this disease. None.
Yeah, we're in agreement. Now I'm going to ask you, as the child psychiatrist, the tough question. So your child comes home, they're under enormous peer pressure. They can now make their own decision, thanks to the laws of our land in certain states. A 15-year-old, they're trying to get it so that 12-year-olds can make a decision without their parents' knowledge. So your child comes home and says, "Dad, I want to get this vaccine. I'm going to get it tomorrow because I'm allowed to make that decision and everybody else is getting it." What do you say?
I would tell the parents to say the same thing that they say when their child says, "I'm going to go drinking. I'm going to go smoking pot. I'm going to go get a tattoo." You say to your child, "I don't support that because I know that it's harmful. And right now, as your parent, I prohibit you from taking that action. When you're 18, if you want to go and get this shot, be my guest. But you will not be doing that right now under my house, under my rules, period." Stand firm, tell your child no. And your child starts kicking and screaming, "But Dad, all my friends are getting it. I don't want to be left out of the party." You bring it back to that same conversation. If all of your friends are using Coke or taking Molly or injecting themselves at that same party, would you allow your child to go there? Absolutely not. You would say, you're going to miss out on that so-called fun because it's not safe. This is the way that we do things in our house. It's my obligation to protect you from your own stupid, bad decisions that are irrevocable. And I'm going to do that right now. That's what I would tell the parents. Don't dilly-dally. Don't pussyfoot around it. Be firm, be strong. Act as a parent, not as a friend. And then just tolerate the tantrums that come, just like you did when your baby was 1, 2, 3, 4. But daddy, I want pizza. All my friends are eating it. You don't say, yeah, sure, have at it. Have all the pizza you want. Get sick, get fat, get acne, get diabetic. No, you feed them vegetables. And then if they get older, if they want to get fat and obese and die early, that's sad, but it's on them. You've done your job. You can step away.
Wow. Thank you for that. That is very well put. Now I'm going to make it a little harder for you. Now it's your best friend. It's the adult who, I'm going to lose my job. I can't support my family. What do I do, Doc?
This is a really challenging question because obviously as adults, we have agency. We have the right to make choices and decisions that may not even be in our best interests. And I do believe that firmly. I think that as soon as you start to question the right, and I mean right in a true citizen, legal, constitutional sense, the right of an adult to make bad decisions, as soon as you start to take that away, it then has to be given over to someone else, usually the state. And I think that's a very slippery slope because once the state starts taking over your right to make bad decisions, it will never end. And that's why we see the removal of plastic straws, the removal of plastic bags, the enforcement of special light bulbs, the elimination of fossil fuels, the small sizing of sodas in New York City by Bill de Blasio. We don't need a government to micromanage our lives, even though drinking a smaller soda is actually beneficial. But the way to go about that is to educate and inform your citizenry so that they can make better decisions for themselves and learn. Just like with children, we don't try to micromanage our children's lives when the decisions that they take will, in some cases, lead them to have a short-term modest harm that they will then learn from so that they don't make those mistakes in the future. So it's difficult to say we can't allow adults to make bad mistakes and say, take these shots. I actually think they should be allowed to take these injections, even though I don't personally support them or as a physician. But I do think we need to inform them. And one of the reasons why adults are actually choosing to take these vaccinations is that they are poorly informed. Those who want to take them and they're informed, by all means, go do it. Many of the times, though, now people who are informed and don't want them are being told if they don't take it, then they're going to lose their jobs, they're going to be ostracized, which is a form of coercion, which is illegal. It's against the Nuremberg Code of Ethics, and yet it's happening, which is another whole disgrace unto itself. What I usually tell parents or adults who are in this situation is you need to look inside yourself and ask yourself this question. There is going to be a risk for me in taking this vaccine, a medical risk to myself, which I cannot in any way really fully truly know. I need to be at peace with the potential that I may permanently harm myself in accepting this injection. If I'm at peace with that risk, then that person can go ahead and get the shot. However, if you are not at peace with that, then you need to be at peace with the consequence of refusing it, which is short-term and is fixable, such as having to move, such as losing your job or suffering a financial duress and then having to find a new one. These are painful experiences, but they are livable and survivable. We can all move. We can all find new jobs. If we have to leave our profession, we can retrain. If we have our health and we have our virtue and we have our sense of integrity of our values, we can survive that. And then I leave it up to the adult and I say, now go and make up your mind and be at peace with your decision. Make sure you're informed. Make sure you know what you're getting into. I think that's the best and only approach that really can be done. I don't think we should be trying to browbeat people into doing the right thing, because in the end, they're going to wind up doing something later that's going to harm them anyway. They have to really be accountable for their own decisions.
Wow.
If you are interested in learning more about this pandemic in general and everything coronavirus, I also host a podcast with Dr. Jeff Barkey. We have wonderful guests on. Dr. Peter McCullough was interviewed recently, Dr. Aaron Cariardi out of UCI, and Dr. Chris Rake out of UCLA, fired for their stance on choice in vaccines. That is at informeddissentmedia.com. The podcast is called Informed Dissent. And I'm also coming out with a book, which should be published within the first couple of weeks of November, which is called Pandemic of Fear. And I try to, in a narrative form, explain my thoughts and my understanding of how we got to where we are, which is really a state of paralysis and the inability to use our minds and to reason and to actually start attacking other people and people that we used to care about out of a form of real sadistic sickness. I think it's well written, and I hope it's informative and a good read. So those would be good.
Can we pre-order this book?
It is not yet available for pre-order. It should be by the end of the month. So if you make a mental note or write down on your bedside table, Pandemic of Fear, check in a couple of weeks on Amazon. You should be able to see it pulled up under my name.
Wonderful. Dr. Mark McDonald, thank you so much. You put into words so clearly what parents need to hear. And I think what every adult who's still wrestling with this decision about whether or not to do this vaccine, to really take into consideration how the magnitude of that decision, that it's huge and it is your choice. I hope we can talk again in the near future.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dee Dee Hoover, and we are here on the set of Against the Wind. And we're introducing tonight my segment, Kids First. We're going to be going out in the world, and sometimes bringing the world in here, to bring you information of what's happening out there during COVID-19 and the vaccines and the masks and the mandates and all the crazy stuff. But right now, we're going to talk about what it's like to be a college student right now in the world that we're living in. So we have Sophie and Alyssa, and they are students at George Fox University, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what year are you guys in?
Our sophomore.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And last year, freshman obviously, mm-hmm. Tell me what it was like on campus.
It was really just weird because you weren't really allowed to live normally as a human being. There were a lot of rules, and we got really accustomed to doing things that should not be normal. Mm-hmm. There was masking in everywhere indoors and even outdoor, organized events.
We became very used to a lot of the rules and, for example, the mask mandate. And so, just having to wear them everywhere, even outside. Especially if there were people around. And I remember that became something I was aware of, people are around, I guess I'll wear one, even if I didn't personally feel threatened health-wise.
There was a lot of hostility between students and judgment if you weren't wearing a mask or if you weren't as concerned about COVID. There were a lot of just voices.
Yeah. Did you feel like their fear was being placed on you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. People wanted everyone else to be scared too, and wanted, felt very strongly that if you weren't concerned about COVID, you were a bad person or were unkind or not showing love to your fellow students. And at a Christian college, we would like to be able to trust that things will work out okay and that God has it in his hands, but a lot of people were way more invested in what the news and the media was saying about it and concerned about the danger, which is valid, but really living in fear.
Yeah. Right. We felt also a lot of people assumed that I agreed with them when it came to masking and different stuff. Mm-hmm. People assume that the general popular perspective is just true. And so people, often in conversations, criticizing people who don't wear masks or the anti-maskers, not knowing that, inside I was an anti-masker or at least torn about it more so last year. Mm-hmm. And that, back home life was very different. And I just remember that being so strange, and especially at the beginning of school, it was really hard because George Fox has this Be Known promise, and it's all about being known. And part of the beautiful thing about going to a new school and a big school is the opportunity to meet new people. And I remember making that really hard because I didn't feel known a lot at the beginning. I remember calling home to my people back home who know my heart and being like, I feel like if I mention these things that are true about me, people will jump to these conclusions because they don't actually know my heart and they're going to assume the things that they associate with these things. I don't know if that makes sense, but
just that, like, you're going to be seen for something that you're not.
Yeah, like having associations with anyone who doesn't want to wear a mask as like a terrible person or this or that or not intelligent.
That was last year, was masks, and now we're getting ready to go to school and the vaccines are out there and tons of mandates everywhere. What happened with George Fox? What did you, I heard you got an email or something.
Yes, so we got a very, we had a lot of strings of emails. They were pushing the vaccination issue very hard at the beginning of the school year and still, saying we're still going to do masks and everything, but please, everyone get vaccinated. It's the way to keep us all safe. Like, please, please, please. Every email.
You say there were incentives too to get it?
Yeah. Yes. They had, so they did like several different things. They even had like chalk art and just like, we were annoyed because it was beautiful and we're like, gosh dang it, this is the perfect explanation or like depiction of propaganda. Like, it's beautiful and yet terrible. But like chalk art telling you to get vaccinated, posters around campus
that cards. I wanted to turn on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What? Money gives away. Oh yeah, go ahead.
Giveaways. So like if you, there's like a raffle for like Fred Meyer gift cards. If you got vaccinated, you could like enter that and win $100.
And then recently they did a free donut giveaway where they had a donut food truck come to campus that they paid for. And it was through, they had some specific like group on campus that was like hosting this, I guess. But basically it was, if you're vaccinated, you could get a free bag of donuts, of like mini donuts. Or if you signed up for this vaccination conversation thing. And it was just, which I was personally really frustrated about. Like, they, it wouldn't be okay in any other like divisive type thing, but for some reason it's okay to offer free donuts to vaccinated individuals only. And they've done a lot of through Instagram and social media advertising, really pushing this and really like trying to hit at the like emotional appeals and like posting pictures of students with signs and like interviews of, this is why I get vaccinated, I do it for my community, you should do it for yours, like join me in this fight, get vaccinated. And so even though, like Alyssa said, even though it's technically a choice, just really pushing and showing that the right choice, like there is a choice, but the right choice is to get vaccinated.
Another thing that changed this year is they sent out a new like policy about following the COVID guidelines. But the difference, the big difference this year, is that there are really severe consequences if you don't, and
if you don't
follow those guidelines.
Okay.
We sign a health addendum, I think, is that what it's called? Like a basically like a health agreement that they added last year about COVID and agreeing to follow COVID guidelines. But this year they said that they were adding that if you don't follow these COVID guidelines, they can send you home and not refund you any of your money. Like, they can kick you out of school and not give you any of your tuition money or anything back.
That is not okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that goes back to the form that we were required to fill out, because I was concerned that if I didn't, or if I disclosed that I was choosing not to get vaccinated, that they would be able to remove me from the student body. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I was asking my mom and dad about, like, do I say that I haven't decided, even though I have decided? Do I just be upfront about it and say I'm not? But, and also trying to decide and navigate how much I was going to let these COVID restrictions rule my life. Like, am I going to follow them super carefully for fear of being kicked off campus and risking the tuition that we're paying for college? And yes.
If you because you're in the minority, that if you share that you don't like masks or you don't want to wear masks or you really don't think they're doing any good and they're affecting your health in a negative way, if you try and share that, whether there's science behind it or not, you're going to be treated differently. And if you share that you don't want to get the vaccine and maybe what some of your reasons are, that you're so far off of what everybody else believes, that you're going to be treated differently. And that, what I'm hearing is that you feel like you're being discriminated against.
Oh yeah.
100%. How does that, what's that like? as a college student, as you're growing up and this is your world that you're going to be entering, what the heck?
It really depends on the day, because we have been so, it's been
so on Monday it's different than Wednesday.
Absolutely.
Wednesday I have a mental breakdown. On Monday we're like,
it was absolutely hammered into our brains since last year that this is okay and that this is normal to have these restrictions and to feel like so scared about this illness and to like be so disgusted by other human beings, like wanting to stay away from them. And so some days it just feels minor because I've lived in this state for so long. And then other days I look around and I'm like, this is absolutely ridiculous. Everything is illogical. Yeah. Nobody is using their brain. And it's really weird with professors because I look at my professors and I'm like, I truly believe that you are an intelligent individual.
You have a doctor. You have three doctorates.
Yeah, you are a professor. You are coaching me. How do you not see the lack of logic in this reasoning? And it's really bizarre.
I feel like, I've texted Alyssa before, like I was in class and or maybe this was after class, I don't know, but I texted Alyssa and I was like, sometimes it just hits me. We're all sitting here with cloth over our face. Like, what the heck? Like, why are we suffocating ourselves? Like, just breathe. Like, just, why don't we just, like, live? And I remember, like, even last year, like, having the strongest desire to just walk into a building without a mask and just, like, live my life and see what would happen. And I try and do that when I can now. Now, I'm like, this is not okay. And it's something that's, like, important to me because I believe that we should have a personal, like, freedom and choice over our own health and how we handle our own health. I think it should be that, like, if you want to wear a mask, if that makes you more comfortable in class, you can wear a mask to class. If you want to be vaccinated, you can be vaccinated. But also, like, if you feel healthy and fine and you're taking vitamins and drinking water and whatever else, like, and you don't want to come to class with a mask because, like, that's not, you don't, believe that's good for you and your own personal health, that you should be allowed to do that.
I wanted to posit the question. Like, I understand that following rules is important to you, but what happens when we stop thinking critically about the things that are forced upon us? Mm-hmm. And at what point, like, right now, maybe you don't believe that this removal of freedom is not going to be, like, this specific way that they have taken away your freedom is not an issue, but what happens when they have the power to take away more? And just throwing it out there that maybe this is something to be concerned about.
I think we have to remember, though, that when having conversations with these other people, there's three approaches you're going to have. You start off with that expert part. Here's some information that I've been given, you know, whether it's websites or a handout or something, that this is what I'm reading and I'm questioning this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're my college peers and I want to know your opinion.
Yeah.
Don't make them wrong. That as soon as somebody, like, they're making you wrong, and what do? You get defensive, you get upset. So you're not going to make them wrong. Mm-hmm. You're not going to tell them that you're right and they're wrong, because they're going to put up defensiveness. But if you give them that expert information first, so that they have some information, and then second, it's advocating for them as well as you. I understand why you're making the decisions you're making. You are being given a lot of information that's just one-sided. So when you look at this other information, I want to advocate for both sides. I want to advocate for us being able to make decisions and enrolling them. And then that personal story. Why are you making the choice that you're making? And for me, for every single person that's different, share your story. Why do you not want to get the vaccine? What's happening for you? You talked, Sophie, about your spirit and how that affects that. And I know you have your beliefs and your trust and your faith. So I think sharing that allows other people to see, and that's, they're going to go home and think about that. Even if they disagree with you to your face, they're going to be able to go, wow, I saw something. And even if you make them think for 1 second, that's what they need to do. We've got to get people thinking that there is another way. So I want to thank you guys for being here.
Thank you.
You're amazing. And if anybody bullies you, you call me.
Okay.
I'm going to be on campus at George Fox talking about that. Being unvaccinated is better. Thanks for watching Kids First. It's really important that we reach out to our kids and that we do what's best for them. Some of these kids are really struggling. They're being discriminated against. They're being bullied against. And if we want to be able to raise them to be healthy, strong, self-thinking individuals, we have to support them. We can't be making people feel bad about the choices that they're making. Let's help these kids. Thank you. I'm Dee Dee Hoover.
Welcome back, Bernadette Pagier, to the In the News segment that is so vital for this show. You are the Public Policy Director of Informed Choice Washington, the host of an Informed Life Radio, and so much more. And you've come to mean so much to those of us here at Against the Wind. So today we're going to focus on an FDA panel's endorsement of COVID shots for kids 5 to 11.
The Defender is reporting, and this is a great place to go to get the details and then hear the medical and scientific experts who are critical of what's happening. So I love this article, breaking FDA panel endorses Pfizer shots for 5 to 11-year-olds. And experts say the vaccine for kids is unnecessary, premature, and will do more harm than good. So within that article, a couple of key points. There's a lack of safety and efficacy data presented by Pfizer. One of their studies went 2 months, the other went 2 weeks. And there were too few children in the study for serious adverse events to really show up.
You know, Bernadette, this is so typical of vaccine research. They don't do long-term studies. So then by the time they endorse it, and what was flabbergasting to me, I mean, I just couldn't believe it. 17 out of 18 people voted that this should be recommended, and the one who didn't abstained. In other words, not a single voice with all the information and the science that we have, not a single voice stood up for kids' safety and to protect our children from a vaccine they absolutely do not need.
It shows how the entire public health system needs to be completely dismantled, brought but down to the ground, and rebuilt from scratch outside of government control. Our government has proved itself unworthy, unable to ethically handle the question of vaccines. And we need to take it, their power to just become giant marketing arms of pharma, out of control. So within that safety and efficacy data, they once again did not use all of the children who participated in the trial. They did this for the older age children. They limited, why? Who are these couple hundred children that they didn't even include in their final data? We know with the older children, there was a 12-year-old girl whose mother's been very vocal, and that Senator Ron Johnson, I believe, you know, she was at this interview with other people injured. That little girl is still in a wheelchair, just really bad health issues. And she was in the clinical trial, and Pfizer did not include her information. It's, And so there's increasing safety signals, as we well know. And of course, all of the serious adverse events were considered by Pfizer people unrelated to the vaccine. So another huge problem being spotlighted right now is the fact that if you create a drug or a vaccine, you hire your scientists, you go out and do the safety studies, you decide what data to hand to the government, and then the government rules on what you told them. And we're talking about a liability-free trillion-dollar product and pharmaceutical companies with a history of fraud and basically, you know, killing, putting people in harm's way by hiding danger information. This is so absurd that this is happening. And then, of course, we've got all that VAERS data and what's called URF, under reporting factor, which is not being considered.
So in the face of, Bernadette, in the face of this massive risks that we've been seeing reported on VAERS, open VAERS, and all the various people who are now coming forward saying we've been injured, now we're going to compare that to the infection fatality rate that you've so clearly shown to be nothing.
Exactly. Now, this is from Dr. Josh, I can't pronounce his name, I apologize, Gutzkow, something like that.
Gutzkow, we've had him on the show.
Oh, you have? Oh, fabulous. Yes. So if I'm understanding this, the Defender article correctly, this slide was what he presented in his public comment to the VRBPAC committee, showing that, so we've got infection fatality rate. Now, a case fatality rate is people that were tested and found to be infected and be a case of COVID. But that doesn't include all the people who got sick and were either asymptomatic or have really low symptoms that nobody reported it, nobody knew about it. to really understand the impact of COVID, you have to include all of those cases. And there's a way they can figure out, you know, about how many of those people are. That's your infection fatality rate. And for the 0 to 17 age group, the infection fatality rate is 0.0002. And if you look at just 5 to 11 year olds, it's even lower.
Now that's per 100,000.
Yeah, per 100,000.
Which is about one in a billion.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's insane that you would have them take a risk for a product that the CDC has acknowledged causes heart swelling, the myocarditis, the pericarditis, blood clotting. They've admitted to Guillain-Barré syndrome. They've admitted to a lot of it. You know, there's way more they haven't admitted to yet, but they've acknowledged the risk. And it's very, the younger you are, the higher the risk of myocarditis in particular.
And this shot, folks, is clearly now hijacking the immune system and creating autoimmunity at unprecedented levels. And also, because the immune system is not as robust as it could be, we're now seeing massive increases in cancer and in shingles. I happened to be watching TV the other day. I meant to say this before. I couldn't believe it. I rarely watch TV. And out comes a commercial and it says, did you know 1 in 3 people have shingles? I thought, what? In my career, 30 plus years as a pediatrician, I can count the times I've seen shingles in kids on maybe one hand, but for sure on two hands. It is so, so rare. And they're now reporting 1 in 3. In fact, when we introduced the chickenpox vaccine, it was, there were only 50 deaths a year from chickenpox in the entire country and a few more cases of shingles. And when that vaccine was introduced, the shingles rate went up. I think it was to more than 100 cases. 1 in 3? Do you suppose they know something's happening or is coming and they want to get ahead of it so that they can just, once everybody's getting shingles, they can say, well, you know, 1 in 3 people get shingles.
Oh, yeah. The marketing messages are getting ahead of the data. And the data is showing in bears that the shot triggers you to, you know, the shingles. If you've got a latent virus, going on, it seems to be reactivating them. So people are getting different herpes outbreaks and the shingles is in that family.
Yeah.
So many things, if they were latent, they were triggering. They're finding there's a signal there for diabetes. If you were borderline pre-diabetic, you know, it may be triggering people to diabetes. So there was a good case study on it, a gentleman that it happened to. This is from a Forbes article in 2020. And it says, in 1966, renowned medical ethicist Henry K. Beecher published an article titled Ethics and Clinical Research, which listed Willowbrook as an example of an unethical clinical experiment, included that, quote, there is no right to risk an injury to one person for the benefit of others. And we know that we're being told you got to vaccinate the children to stop transmission to adults. Right? That's what we're being told is the main reason, although they keep harping on the news that, you know, children are at risk and that cases are going up. Even Paul Offit in that same article said, I don't think you're ever justified to inoculate a child with an infectious virus that might kill them. But what's the difference between inoculating a child with an infectious virus or injecting a child with an mRNA vaccine that makes their body make a spike protein that might kill them, right? I mean, same principle.
Exactly the same principle.
Exactly the same principle. And so what we really have evidence are, since children do not need these shots, since safe and effective treatments exist, since we know that underlying health issues for children are also what put them at risk, and that, you know, vitamin D, tending to underlying issues, reducing weight, all of those things improve outcomes. What is the reason being used? Well, they're saying it's false and unethical. Reason is to protect adults by vaccinating children, but they admit that the shots do not prevent infection or transmission. So where's their logic? Where's their critical thinking? But the underlying reason, Dr. Paul, is even more hideous. The underlying non-stated reason is the government wants to be able to move these products from underneath the Emergency Preparedness Act, where they're shielded from liability, to the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act shield, but they can only put them under that act today if it's recommended to children and pregnant women and their unborn children. I know for sure that they have to recommend to children, but I know that pregnant women and their unborn children are included under that shield as well. So if they recommend it to those, that means anybody who gets these products cannot sue. You know, it places the product under the shield, not the individual, if that makes sense. So the real unethical, immoral, just hideous reason is children are being used as human financial shields for Pfizer and Moderna and Johnson & Johnson. That's it.
Well, there it is, folks. If you want to protect the pharmaceutical industry and their massive profits, like profits we've never seen before, then you go along with this and you potentially sacrifice your health or your child's health so they can have their profits. What should we do?
There's some great stuff going on. There's some great lawsuits being filed. There's some great legislators taking action. I feel like the tide is really turning, but now is not the time to relax. Now is the time to redouble our efforts and really stand up for what's right.
Yeah. And folks, if you're watching, if you have a child who's in this age group, who's now being targeted, you, the parent, you, the guardian, it is absolutely up to you to do what you were put on this earth to do for your children. And that is to protect. And right now, your child is being targeted for profit.
Targeted for profit. And again, these are just four of many outstanding organizations that have your back, that are fighting for you, fighting for medical freedom, fighting to make sure that if you get COVID, you recover from COVID safely. So we've got the FLCCC Alliance, Physicians for Informed Consent, Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, and America's Frontline Doctors. And like I said, there's many more, but these are four of the core groups that I encourage you to support, to visit, to share their information. And if you've got it within your means, to financially support them in any way that you can.
Thanks, Bernadette. It's always a pleasure to get your report, and we'll look forward to talking next week.
Okay, thank you. Take care.
You Bye-bye. Too.
Dr. Paul here. Doctorsandscience.com is where you go to get access to my exclusive members-only section. This is how you, the viewers, support our work. We have no sponsors. We are fully supported by you, our viewers. What do you get in the members section? It's quite a list. You get access to a couple of my ebooks. The first one is the authoritative reference list for my Vaccine Friendly Plan book. I also have written a book, very extensive, called Everyday Health, that covers pretty much what I think you should be doing if you want to live a healthy life in this world today. But there's so much more. We have a live Q&A every week after the show with yours truly, Dr. Paul, answering your questions. Submit your questions online and I will tackle as many of them as I possibly can and try to answer to the best of my ability whatever burning questions you have. In addition to this, you get transcripts of every show. We have other bonus content, and I think one of the huge bonus content pieces is the PowerPoints of the talks I'm giving as I travel around the country. People are always asking me, how can we get those PowerPoints? This is how you do it. Head on over to doctorsandscience.com and become a member and join the team of Against the Wind.
Help me spread the truth and share this on social media and with your friends at doctorsandscience.com. I look forward to running with you against the wind. Go to our website, doctorsandscience.com, sign up, donate if you can, and let's make this the weekly show the nation's been waiting for. I'm Dr. Paul.